Welcome to the Insurance Huddle, hosted by me, Dr. John Wales. This is the place to be for insurance brokers, agents, and agencies, where we break down topics important to the insurance community with insights from industry experts. Welcome to the Insurance Huddle, the place to be for insurance brokers, agents, and agencies, where we break down topics important to the insurance industry with insights from industry experts. Today's guest has over 30 years of experience in the property and casualty insurance industry as a consultant, an author, and speaker. As the president of Barrant & Associates LLC, he has a proven track record of success in helping insurance professionals find opportunities in today's challenging and changing insurance environment. His company has recently launched a training program specifically designed for insurance professionals. He is here today to help us improve our agencies by sharing his understanding of producer contracts, producer poaching, agency mergers and acquisitions, and agency startups. Fellow agents, I would like to welcome to the huddle Mr. Chris Barrant.
Thank you, John. Appreciate that introduction very much. I'll have to pay you later.
Chris, as we were preparing for this podcast, you brought up some great conversation on agents not necessarily understanding their contracts as we dive into this industry. Most insurance agent owners will dive in to sell, not necessarily to manage a business. So yes. Could you relay your experience on how you got into the industry? And then maybe you can help us learn a little bit about the important legal side of our contracts.
Well, sure. So first and foremost, I'm not an attorney. So my advice regarding contracts is from pure experience and the brain killing cells of reading these things. So yeah, I got into insurance by accident like you did, like most everybody does. This is the accidental industry. I got a call from an insurance company to come for an interview for an underwriter position way long ago. And I was on my way at the time up to New York with my fiance. She's my wife ever since. And we went to Niagara Falls and we went to the Canadian side. And I remember there was a sign up on a neon sign on the building, and it was vertical. And it said something about underwriting and undertaking. And I looked up at that and I go, I just signed a contract to be one of those, but I'm honestly not sure what an underwriter is versus an undertaker. And I had no idea what the job was that I just agreed to take. And that's how accidental it was for me to get into this industry. It's like, I have no idea what I'm doing.
I like that, undertaker and underwriter. So far, that's one of my favorite sayings now. I'm gonna write that down and that's gonna go in my dictionary.
Yeah, it was a double-faced sign. And one side said underwriter and underwriting, one side said undertaker. And it's like, wow, I'm one of those. We'll see. So anyway, that's how I got into the industry at a carrier. And I also think the only reason I got hired at that job in many ways was it was a big company, a large national carrier, and they had just received their very first PC. And they had put it in a shrine, a room of its own. And I had been working at IBM and I didn't want to work on the East Coast. I'm out in Colorado. I've lived in Colorado almost all my life. I wanted to come back to Colorado. That's why they connected with me. And they knew I worked for IBM. Nobody out of 250 people knew how to run that PC. So I'm pretty sure the reason I got hired was because I knew how to run it, not for any other reason.
Yeah, I had my first PC. I remember I had it would almost qualify as a PC. I remember having to buy a kit for Pong and having to build my own machine so that I would have the ability to play Pong. And that was high technology back then. Yeah. We had friends coming over from all over to play Pong. My, how the industry has changed. What advice could you give to us to help us understand product contracts, producer poaching, and agency mergers and acquisitions, with a special focus on agency mergers and acquisitions, because we're seeing a lot of that right now. We're seeing a lot of small mom and pops trying to join together. And from experience, I can tell you that a lot of them aren't organized right and there's no plan. They're just, hey, let's get together and it's settle over a beer and a handshake. And I'm really concerned that in the future that we're going to have some serious repercussions.
Yeah, John, you're right. I'm working on a bunch of them right now, both the planning ones, they're thinking it through, and the ones that didn't think it through, and the repercussions are coming. I tell people this all the time. I make a lot more money working, trying to fix things 5-10 years later than I would make if people sat down and worked through the right process initially, because to fix it down the road is a nightmare. And a lot of it comes back to the contracts. No one gets into this industry to read contracts, even though that's what we sell, right? We sell legal contracts, but nobody gets into the industry to read them. So if you're doing mergers, acquisitions relative to producer contracts, hire a third party that specializes in these things. I'm not here to advertise myself. I'm not here to say hire Chris Buran and Buran Associates. But you need someone that's done this 20 times, 40 times, 100 times to help you understand what needs to go into it. If you're doing it for the first time, it's an impossibility to know what needs to go into the contracts. Most of these smaller agents you mentioned, their attorney and their accountant, their advisors, their professional advisors, they're generalists. They don't know the specifics of independent insurance agencies in general, and it requires specific knowledge to get those contracts written correctly. Insurance agency accounting, to give you an example, is a unique beast. Almost virtually no other industry out there has the same requirements. And if we're working with an accountant that doesn't know those requirements and they're helping write, say, the buy-sell of a merger, they'll get it wrong 100% of the time. It's an impossibility. You have to hire people that know what they're doing.
I recently saw a buy-sell agreement that was completely unfunded. Through the entire agreement, didn't mention anything about the capitalization or funding of the agreement. And I kept seeing a big black hole because, I mean, if this partnership went south, nobody would own the book.
Right.
But again, as agents, we don't know what we don't know. And things like that can really affect your livelihood in the future.
It will definitely. I can't tell you the number of families I've seen blown up because they think, hey, we're family. We'll never have a disagreement. We're going to do this merger. We're going to do this deal. And then their agreement, it isn't funded. A lot of times there's not even a definition of how the value will be derived, just a black hole as to what the number is going to be. And in a time of stress, everybody's going to have a different opinion of what that number should be.
Could you give us some high touch points of what you think the main sections of a buy-sell agreement need to be? From your experience, what are the high points? What are the questions that we need to be asking ourselves as we're looking at entering into a partnership?
All your normal legalese, for sure, obviously. But you need to have all your trigger points really well defined. So what triggers the buy-sell agreement? Death, obviously, hopefully. Although I've seen it written so that it wasn't. Believe it or not, disappearance should still be in there. Disability, great definition of disability needs to be included. But other things too, like what happens in the event of a divorce? Does the partner need to sell? Does the spouse get to become an owner in the agency? What happens if there's a loss of a license? It's not common, but it's not uncommon either to see people in their middle ages go off the deep end as the partnership has evolved and do things that would cause them to lose a license. If they don't have a license, they shouldn't be a shareholder, in my opinion. So all of those sorts of things, trigger points need to be in there for sure. And then there has to be the definition of value. And the definition of value needs to be written very, very, very carefully relative to in a partnership, pretty much the only definition that can apply that's fundable is fair market value. It's one of the big problems I see mistakes attorneys make is that they intermingle fair value and fair market value. Legally, those are incredibly different definitions. The numbers that you'll calculate, a good appraiser will calculate, will be dramatically different between fair value and fair market value. So if they're used interchangeably incorrectly, you have a massive problem with your legal contract at that stage. An example also why you want to have an insurance expert review it is, I've seen a few times where the attorneys put in the valuation clause, say 2x premium instead of 2x commissions. Well,
a little bit of a difference there.
Yeah, a little bit of a difference. The first time I saw it, it took us 2 years to convince the judge it was a typo. Both parties signed it. Neither party read the contract before they signed it, but the one party died. And the widow is insisting that the partner pay 2x premium. And so it took 2 years to convince the judge that the surviving partner was just lazy, didn't read the buy-sell, and it was a typo. And you talk about the kind of money spent to convince the judge that was a typo. It was one expensive endeavor. So those are some of the high points that you definitely, definitely, definitely want built in. Then obviously you have your first right to refusal. And I also think that every buy-sell should have a compensation point. One of the things that blows partnerships up in this industry with regularity is that the partnership agreement stipulates that the partners will make most of their money out of distributions. And that is a problem because sooner or later, one partner will work harder than the other partner, and one partner will be lazier than the other partner, or downright just flat lazy. But if they're both making money out of their distributions, there's no way to hold the partner not working as hard to task. So the compensation part should be specific to what they actually bring to the table. Distribution should be the smallest part of their compensation in order to keep the partnership working. That's a really important point. It makes all the difference in the world in making partnerships continue to work for a long time.
Most people enter into an agreement like this thinking, it'll never blow up. We always go in there with this optimistic rainbows and butterflies attitude. And I have never really seen that sustainable, even in very strong relationships and in business arrangements. It's always come down to what does the contract say?
It always comes down to what the contract says, because sooner or later, something's going to go wrong. And a contract, just like insurance, an insurance policy is useless for the most part until there's a claim. And a claim is when something went wrong. A contract, a buy-sell, a producer contract, whatever kind of contract, it's only there for when it goes wrong. And that's the way we have to look at it. We should look at it. Yes. All right. What happens when something goes wrong? What's the answer? It's in the contract. That's the way to look at it.
That's a great way to look at it. Now, as I was reviewing our show notes, I'm looking here and you bring up producer poaching. Because we're seeing that really common in the industry. If you have somebody who is halfway successful in what they're doing and putting in half effort, there are 20 agencies out there trying to hire them. And how would you address that as far as a contracting issue or a business issue?
That's a really interesting one. I've never seen poaching so intense in my 30 plus years career. Not even anything close. It's off the charts. There are now multiple private equity models designed to fund the litigation on the poaching, which, again, I've never seen. So a few things. One is you want to hire. If you want to protect yourself as an agency owner, you do want to hire. Even if they're $500 an hour, the very best employment attorney you can find, especially one that has some experience in insurance. Agencies, insurance distribution. The next thing that you want to do to write your contract is why you want that attorney. But you also want to have an environment that's super positive, not like lax, not where they get to do whatever they want to do, but you want an environment that's positive. A lot of times the producers that leave that are going to be poached fall into two categories in my experience. One category is that they are the best producer in the agency. The other producers are pretty poor, and they're tired of feeling like they're subsidizing all of the other poor producers. And so that makes them very vulnerable and available to be poached. One of the best solutions for hiring quality producers is to first get rid of all the lousy ones, because really good producers don't want to work side by side with lousy producers. So that's one of the clues to hiring good producers. The other kind of producer that I think is easily poached is one that is really high maintenance. They are really, really good. They'll have a $750,000 to $1.5 million commission book, and yet they're very, very high maintenance. If you want to keep that producer, you have to work to find the balance between their high maintenance and their becoming disgruntled because you're not playing to their every whim. That's a very fine line, but that's what one of the keys to not losing those people. But the first thing is hire the right attorney to draw up the contract. Understand that non-competes are pretty much worthless. It's all about the trade secrets and the non-piracies and making sure those are hard, really hard, written in there and enforceable.
What's funny is I'm a member of several Facebook groups on the insurance market, and every one of them will ask, hey, does anybody have a sample producer contract? And I'm looking at this and I'm thinking, you know what? When I started my agency almost 20 years ago, I did the same thing.
Yeah.
And I don't think we have learned our lesson, but we need to make sure that you're using, don't just use somebody else's flawed contract. You better make sure that it's accurate for your business situation.
You better. Yeah. 20 years ago, you could get by with it. Now you really can't. I mean, you just can't. The law varies too much from state to state. We have a big problem that's bubbling up to the surface with inside producers and outside producers. Those contracts must read very differently between inside, outside producers. You've got to have a contract that's written specific to the insurance industry by someone that's really good at this, because the poaching is so severe right now. That's just way more complicated than it was 20 years ago, John.
As a sidebar, do you have any thoughts on the new thing that's bubbling up is independent contractors versus employees?
Yeah, it's next to impossible to justify an independent contractor producer in today's world. There's maybe one or two paths left. It has to be done very, very specifically with you have to have a lot of I's dotted and T's crossed. Otherwise, it's pretty much next to impossible to meet the qualifications today.
I'm seeing that as my agency was based in California and they were the ones spearheading that difference because they wanted everybody on W-2 instead of a 1099. And we're seeing a real push on that because I bring this up because I had several producers that really wanted to be subcontractors and they didn't want me to be their boss. They just wanted to sell when they wanted to sell and they wanted to not sell when they didn't want to sell.
Right.
And trying to figure out the contracts on how they can be that independent and not be a W-2 employee was very, I mean, like you said, it was like threading a needle from a mile away to make sure that it was working. Yeah. And I know several agencies that are now facing payroll issues because the state has said, guess what? You've misclassed this person going back 10 years. So now you have to pay back payroll taxes. Yeah. And that isn't any fun. And it's affecting the producer that you were trying to make happy. And it's definitely affecting your profitability and having to go back and pay 9 years of expense that you weren't planning for.
For sure. I feel for those people. I do.
I feel for them as well. Luckily, I wasn't one of those. I am one of the few people. And when I started my agency that I didn't pay a lot of attention to the producer agreement, I probably should have paid closer to attention. Luckily, it didn't bite me. But as far as having classes of whether they were independent or whether they were going to be considered a W-2, I kept a checklist. And if they didn't meet any of that criteria on that checklist, guess what? They were a W-2 employee.
Smart. It's really hard to thread that needle.
It's very hard, especially as you're starting your agency. Because when you're an agency startup, you don't know the questions to ask. Most of the training programs out there are all geared towards sales. They'll teach you 10 different ways to overcome an objection or to overcome call reluctance or picking up the phone. But none of the programs that I've seen will help the agents develop a true business plan on what their business is going to start at and, more importantly, where they want it to be. But what are some of the advice points that you can give for the agencies, well, the agents that are starting their own agency?
When I started doing consulting, switch over from underwriting and marketing and carriers to being a consultant, my mentor made me do a promise. And I've always done my best to own up to that promise ever since. And he said, I will guide you and be your mentor if you promise to never forget the small agency and the startup. And so I always will talk to the small or startup agencies and help them out. And if there's one thing I would encourage everybody to do is to work with a true professional. The Facebook groups, the networks, they can guide you. But in a lot of cases, what I've seen on those sites is kind of the blind leading the blind. Nobody knows enough to know what the right answers are, or even the questions in many cases. So if they can connect with a consulting firm that specializes in insurance agencies and spend a little bit of money to do it, it's well worth your time. It's also well worth your time if you can identify one of the few places that exist for classes on how to build an agency. One state association that probably does the best job of any state association I know is Michigan. The MAIA has a program called TQA. And it's I've been teaching that along with two cohorts for 20 years. So if you're in Michigan listening to this, it's one of the best solutions out there, very affordable. And then, like you said at the introduction, we have a program designed to help people learn to run agencies. And it's designed for both people starting an agency, but also people that are the next generation coming up to being the succession plan, so to speak. One of the things I've noticed is that when people talk about agency perpetuation, they talk about the financing of it, but they forgot that there's a skill set required to learn to be a manager, and a skill set required to learn to be a leader. And you can do all the great financing in the world, but if you don't have the management leadership skills, it's pretty pointless. So my firm built a program out for that. And it's a lot of fun to see that next generation come up and gain those skills, and to see that producer who's this phenomenal producer go, oh my gosh, I never realized there was so much in actually managing the agency every single day. Eye-opening. And know that their path to success is going to be so much better now because their eyes are open. I really enjoy that.
You hear all the agency aggregators and the captives say, you know, buy your own business, be your own business, and expand your own business, be your own entrepreneur. And that's actually the least thing that I see happening. I see what's happening is we jump in the industry being a sales rep.
Yeah.
I keep telling the story because it's pertinent. I got in the industry and was starving. I mean, I wasn't making it. And it wasn't until I realized that I had to run a business, that it wasn't about selling policies. Selling policies is important because that's your intake of funds. But if you don't have a business unit with procedures and policies and documentation, that it makes it almost impossible to succeed long-term in this industry. And I was reading an article and it said that we are running right now where our industry has an 80% failure rate. 80% of the people that jump in to start their own insurance agency fail within 5 years.
Yeah.
And I think that's because of the business knowledge that we aren't trained as business people. Some of us have a hard time making that mental transition from being a salesperson and focusing in on the policies to actually running a real business. Do you see the same thing happening? And do you have any tips that would maybe help us avoid that?
Oh, man, John, you're bringing up really amazingly good, poignant points. And I don't think it ends with just startups. It definitely keeps going for a long time. I tell people all the time, these are the inflection points in running an agency. Somewhere around $500,000 commission, $1 million, $3 million, and $7 million, and $10 million. Those are the inflection points where how you manage the agency must change. And if you don't adjust the way you manage, not sell, but manage at those points, the agency will plateau every time. And understanding the importance of the management is just crucial. I'll tell you a great story. It's the best story I know. It's one of my favorite clients ever. This goes back to the 70s, and these three guys came together. And this was such an inspiration to me because it was the first time I saw an agency owner who, who understood the value of managing an agency. They came together, they bought this little tiny book, and they promptly went broke. And he said, and so the one, they were all one third owners. And so the kind of the leader of the three said, boys, we're broke. So we are going to start running this as a business. We're not going to take a paycheck for 6 months. None of us, no matter what happens. And we're going to run this as a business. And forevermore, we are going to pay ourselves based on our individual performance. We will have our own reviews. We will abide by our own rules, the rules that we apply to everybody else in the agency. We will be no different. We won't be held up above everyone else. This will be run by a business. If you don't perform as a partner, you're out. And they went on to build it from bankruptcy to a top 100 agency within about, I think it was 18 years. And it was one of the few partnerships where everything went really well all the way through because of the accountability that was built into the buy sell, built into everything else they were doing. And it was just a remarkable story. You have to run it as a business if you want to succeed.
A lot of it is self-accountability. That's a great model because not only do we have to hold the people that work with us, I'm not going to say for, because I don't believe anybody works for anybody else. Everything's a partnership. So it's working with us. So the team members that work with us and holding ourselves to the same accountability, if not more stringent accountability, than we're holding our team to.
Yes, absolutely. That's just critical. And it ties in with the buy sell where we started. If you create accountability with the compensation plan, it's a wonderful place to start and build from there. It works really well. And so, for example, if you're a producer owner, what would you pay a producer? 40-30? Okay, well, pay yourself 40-30. Start thinking like a business person with accountability.
I think a lot of the issue is most of the people entering in the industry right now are entering in the industry completely underfunded. They're walking in thinking, oh, I have enough to pay for my license. And then the business will magically land on my doorstep. And they're not thinking that, okay, you need a marketing budget. You need an operations budget. You need tax accruals. You need to have, you need to learn very quickly some of the basics of learning how to run a business as a business. Not as a sales group. And I think that we need to figure out how to push that out to the agents that are out there, because we have a high failure rate as an industry. And I'm thinking, how many families is that hurting? What can we do to retain our agents? What advice can we help them grow their business and become a player in the market rather than eking out a living as a chop shop on a corner?
Man, I love your approach. One of the many things I'd probably encourage is make sure that as a startup, you understand insurance agency accounting for all your listeners to this podcast, because every state, there's a misunderstanding out there that not all states are what are called trust states. All states are trust states. There's actually a federal law relative to insurance agency trust accounting, believe it or not. It's actually a federal regulation. The misunderstanding is that some states allow you to commingle trust monies and operating monies, but 100% of all states require that you remain in trust all the time. So in trust means that your free cash and your premiums receivable exceed your premiums payable. And that it has to be that way every day of the year. There's not just some days of the year.
You hit on a great point. If we don't know what buckets or things are coming in, how do we know where to put the money for the buckets going out?
Oh, without question. One of the failure points, and I'm seeing this a lot, an awful lot with small agencies and startups, is that they are using QuickBooks. QuickBooks is a great accounting system. But QuickBooks isn't designed with, at least as it comes off the shelf, to handle independent insurance agency trust accounting and agency bill business. It's a real weird type of accounting. And that's why insurance agency accounting is always a combination of cash and accrual. It's never one or the other. Pretty much by law, it's a combination of the two. Yeah. Most generic systems, one or the other.
And not only is it a combination of cash and accrual, but you have to have the right accrual accounts and the right cash accounts. You can't intermingle them, or else your accounting completely blows up.
It totally blows up. And I'm seeing agencies get in trouble, and they don't know it until it's too late this point. So if it's a startup and you're doing all the right things and you're making some sales, this is one of the most critical points I can make to help people succeed, is get the right accounting advice and systems to do your accounting correctly for this very unique world as soon as you possibly can. Budget for it, plan for it. Because when I go to do an agency valuation 5 years later or 10 years later, and we can't make heads or tails out of the books, the value plummets, because there's this little clause in all the carrier contracts, or pretty much all the carrier contracts, that says, if you can't show that you're in trust, you lose title to your expirations immediately.
We're seeing some of the carriers enact that. We're seeing carriers come in and saying, show us your books. And if the books aren't suitable, they're canceling the appointment and you're losing your renewal revenue. I have two sayings. I said, you know, it's hard to sell when you're focused on business problems. And it's almost impossible to roast marshmallows when you're the one on fire. And I think many of the agencies, when they hit that plateau, they get to this point, they think, oh, great, I'm starting to pay my expenses, I'm starting to get comfortable. And that's the point when they forget their marketing costs. That's the point when they start forgetting their accounting and fiduciary responsibilities. It's part of that mindset. Are we preparing agents to become business owners rather than self-producers?
Yeah, it's a hard one. It's a hard transition to make, but it's the difference between that 80% failure and the 20% success, is that thought process, really. One last point on the accounting. If you have an accountant that has never worked with independent insurance agencies, help that accountant understand how you're different. I've got bunches of articles. They're all free on my website on this subject. I've got articles all over the internet on this subject. You know, go Google them, find them, and take them to your accountant.
So, Chris, could you give us that website so our agencies know how to get a hold of you?
Oh, sure. Yeah, it's www.burand-associates.com.
So that is burand-associates.com.
Correct.
Thank you for all the information that you've given our agents. We appreciate it. And agents out there, remember, it's more than just selling policies. It's about running a business. Let's learn how to do it correctly so that way we don't end up with pain points in the future. Chris, do you have any final words of wisdom for our agents?
Keep listening to the podcast, John. Your points are the best points I've heard for startup agencies today. Really excellent.
Thank you. I've learned, again, it's how do you learn good judgment? By making a lot of bad decisions. And I will tell you, I made a lot of bad decisions when I first started, and I almost failed several times because of it. Yeah, everything from learning how to run payroll tax and making sure that, again, I was ignorant and used QuickBooks and didn't know how to set it up. And that did cause me a lot of problems. So I know for a fact out there that our agents are facing the same problems that I face.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I'm hoping that experts like you can help them avoid the pitfalls that I stepped into.
It's my passion. It really is my passion. I love helping people that want to run a business. I thoroughly enjoy it. And it's what gets me going in the mornings. And anything that we can do to keep the industry going strong. And let me finish with this. One of the reasons I'm passionate about insurance, even though I got into it totally by accident and have learned to love it, is that insurance is the greatest tool in the world for helping people recover from tragedy. And when we do our job right, and we need to run a business right in order to be able to help people, when we do our job right, we help businesses and homeowners and drivers recover from these tragic situations so much more quickly than they ever could if they didn't have insurance or if they had the wrong insurance. To me, it's a calling almost to do it right. And that's why I'm so passionate about it. So thank you for asking me to be here today. I appreciate that.
Thank you, Chris. And again, fellow agents, if you have any questions on learning how to grow your business, understanding producer contracts, avoiding producer poaching, agency mergers and acquisitions and startups, and learning how to run your agency as a business, I encourage you to contact Chris at Burand, B-U-R-A-N-D hyphen associates.com. Thank you and welcome to the huddle.
Thank you.
That's it for this edition of the Insurance Huddle. We'll see you next time. In the meantime, be sure to check out our Facebook page and Medium blog, linked in the description box down below, for more great resources. This podcast has been brought to you by CoverWallet for Agents, the easiest way for insurance agents to quote, bind, and service their small business clients. All online and in minutes. Check us out at coverwalletforagents.com.